Good morning. This is Sunday, October 19th, about 11 o'clock. We are continuing our study of certain chapters in the Infinite Way books spread out over several years. This book we are looking at today is Realization of Oneness. Realization of Oneness. And there's a subtitle, The Practice of Spiritual Healing. Now, the Realization of Oneness and the Art of Spiritual Healing in the 1959 Infinite Way Letters and the Foundation of Mysticism, several books came out of the lectures and talks that Joel Goldsmith gave in 1959. And the reason that he gave these talks is because he came to see people were not getting the principles of spiritual healing as practiced in the Infinite Way. Many people came through metaphysics, and they came to the Infinite Way, which leads one to mysticism rather than metaphysics. The metaphysics are there. That's the letter. But the healing work comes out of the mystical consciousness, which is the silence. So you have the letter and you have the silence. These two parts make up the Infinite Way. Now, Joel realized that people were not understanding spiritual healing, even as he didn't in the beginning, even though he was doing it. If you remember, he went to a Christian Science practitioner because he had a really severe cold. He had the flu, and it was really bad. And he came to this man's door and knocked on it, and the man said, "I'm off today. I don't practice today." But according to Joel, he looked at Joel and how bad Joel looked, and he said, "Oh, come on in." And so they sat down and they had a meditation together. And Joel left after the meditation, and he said something happened. Something tremendous happened. There was an inner transformation. Not only did the cold leave, not only did the sickness leave, but so did his desire for many human things. Smoking cigars, going to the races, playing cards, all that left. And what's more, it awakened the Christ within Joel. And so this practitioner did him quite a favor. Not only did the cold disappear, but the Christ in him was awakened. And the reason, or the way that he recognized it, was in the days that followed, because another salesman came up to him and said, "Joel, I don't know what your religion is, but if you pray for me, I think I could get rid of this headache." And Joel closed his eyes and said, "Well, God, I have no idea how to pray, Father. I guess if anything needs to be said, you need to say it." And the man tugged on his sleeve and said, "Great, thank you, Joel. That's wonderful." And you can tell by what Joel tells us there that he wasn't knowing any specific truth, was he? No, he was saying, "God, I don't know what to..." And he was interrupted because the man said, "Thank you, Joel, it's all gone." And it happened again and again. And eventually, someone working in his office said, "Joel, when are you going to wise up? You haven't had any calls for sales, but you've had 36 calls for healings." And so he left... He left the office and he went and he opened up an office as a practitioner. But he did not know how he was doing this. And so he researched it and he looked and he asked that God reveal the principles. And eventually he came to the principles of impersonalization, nothingization, and then realization of God's presence. And those were the three principles. And so he taught them to the best of his ability. But I'm guessing sometime in 1958 he came to see, after teaching for 11 years, because I think he started in 47. At least that's when the book The Infinite Way came out. But after 11 years of on the circuit teaching all over the world, he came to see people were not understanding these principles. And so he devoted 1959 to explaining the principles of spiritual healing as practiced in the Infinite Way. And out of those talks, Lorraine Sinkler and Joel Goldsmith put together the book, The Art of Spiritual Healing. And then later came this book, Realization of Oneness, The Practice of Spiritual Healing. So, we're going to look at this chapter. I don't see how you could look at this book and not pick this chapter. And it's a chapter called No And. And really, we can sum it up in one sentence. God is, and there is no God and. I guess that's two sentences, isn't it? There is no God and, only God is. Now he takes several hundred words, maybe even 1,000 words, to explain that. In fact, this whole book, probably over 10,000 words, is explaining that. There is no God and. Now, he's also going to explain in this chapter, there's no hypnotism and. There's no carnal mind and. There's no carnal mind in a form out here. There's carnal mind appearing as a form out here. And there's no God and harmony out here. There's God manifest as harmony, or appearing as harmony. All right, so let us take a moment, become still, become receptive, put on your listening ears, have a little meditation, ask the Father, ask your true identity, your I, to reveal what needs to be revealed. And let us have a moment of silence before we begin. Okay, so here we go. I will say this. Joel was able to, after that experience with the practitioner, which awakened him to his true identity, he was able to somehow go directly into the silence. And he himself was not aware of how was he doing this. And it took him quite a while to learn the principles through research and study and prayer and meditation. Eventually he learned to meditate. Remember, he said he practiced for 8 months, several times a day. I would guess 12 times a day or more before he had his first experience, and it only lasted a half a second. And he wasn't sure it was real until it happened again. So he was able to enter the silence after this experience with the practitioner, but not consciously. It was almost an unconscious thing, and he wasn't sure how he was doing it. But eventually he came to the place where he could do it consciously. Consciously he could see through the appearance and rest in the Word. And after he learned those principles, he began to try to teach them. But then in 1959 he decided, no, they're not getting them. He was ready to take the students a little higher, but they weren't ready because they hadn't yet grasped the principles of spiritual healing. And so he went out in 1959 and he gave these talks. And this one is called No And, this chapter, which came out of one of those talks. It's chapter 4 in Realization of Oneness called No And. And by the way, No And is Christ consciousness. If you develop the consciousness of No And, you have Christ consciousness. All right. So he starts us off with, the secret of meeting error lies in knowing its nature. And the nature of error can be summed up in such words as carnal mind, suggestion, hypnotism, appearance, mesmerism, world mind, mental images. You can go on and on. And you remember in the art of meditation, in the art of spiritual healing, he says, you can pick any name you like, so long as it means nothingness. And in this chapter, he definitely picked the word hypnotism. The nature of error as hypnotism, or the carnal mind, can be illustrated in this way. If there were a plant in the room where you are now sitting and someone hypnotized you, he could make you believe, instead of branches, snakes were growing out of the flower pot, and you would accept and believe it. I guess we've all seen, not so much lately, but back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, I saw a lot of stage productions where a hypnotist would invite people up from the audience and make them think that they were kittens, and they would be licking their paws and make them think they were chickens, and they would walk around like chickens and do silly things like that. You remember? Well, if you're old enough to remember that, you know that that hypnotist could make somebody believe that there were snakes coming out of a flower pot, and they would believe it and accept it. He says, no matter what you might do to those non-existent snakes, you could not change the fact that as long as you remain hypnotized, you will see snakes. You remember where the hypnotist would tell the subject, your arm is like lead, it's heavy, you cannot lift it, and now lift your arm. And they would struggle, and they couldn't lift their arm, remember? Well, that's what he's saying here. As long as you're hypnotized, you're going to see snakes. Now, just as it is possible to hypnotize you into believing that there are snakes in the room, are you ready? So is it possible to hypnotize you into believing that there is a selfhood other than God in any place where you happen to be. Now, I must warn you, this chapter is very, very deep. It is assuming that you have had some experience with meditation in seeing through appearances, even if only a glimpse, where you've had the experience of seeing through the appearance and seeing the appearance disappear. Maybe it was only a cold that you had, a mild cold, or maybe it was allergies, or maybe it was a few pounds, or maybe it was, it looked as if your supply was drying up, or rather your income, and so you increased your income. Maybe you felt lonely, and you were able to practice the principles and see that because of omnipresence, it's impossible to be alone, and then a companion showed up. He's assuming that you have seen in one form or another, you have seen an appearance disappear. And you have seen more of reality appear. Because this chapter is very, very deep. So listen, he says, as soon as you have been hypnotized into believing in a self apart from God, that would be any human beings, you then accept all the beliefs regarding the self, birth, growth, and ultimately death. There is only one way to be rid of the human picture, and that is to understand there is no person, no self other than God in the room or in any other place. But the hypnotized person will at once counter with, "How can you say that there is only God in this room?" And the answer is, because there is only one life, one soul, one spirit, and that is God. What then can be present except God? Nothing. Now this line here, you need to underline it and star it and highlight it. The moment you see God and the "and" is italicized, it's important. The moment you see God and you are hypnotized. He's going to tell you later, but I'm going to tell you now. The moment you see God and a human being, you are hypnotized. So if you look out and you see any human beings, you are seeing hypnotism. If you look out and you see any matter, any material universe, you are hypnotized. You are seeing hypnotism. The moment you see God and you are hypnotized. The moment you see a material world, you are hypnotized. There is no possible way to get rid of the appearance. Okay, that sounds pretty serious. I can't get rid of the appearance. He says, that's the reason if you kill the snake over there in the flower pot, two more will rise up to take its place. Everybody still dies because everybody who is born must die. Yes, I'm sorry to be the one to inform you. No, I'm not. But if you see someone being born, these cute little babies, you are hypnotized. You're looking at hypnotism. And if you see that same one 70 years later, lying in their casket, if it's an open casket, and you go to the funeral, you are seeing death. You are seeing hypnotism. You're hypnotized. If you see birth or you see death. Because the moment you see God and somebody else, you are hypnotized. And so he says on the next page, if you can agree that there is God, you must be able to understand there cannot be error, disease, or death. In fact, not since time began has there ever been a single death in the kingdom of God. That is such a profound statement. Think of this. Let's look at it again. Not since time began has there ever been a single death in the kingdom of God. And in the kingdom of God is italicized. Let's look at it backwards. In the kingdom of God, there has not been a single death since time began. Now let's look at this. In the kingdom of God, there has not been a single birth since time began. Because human birth and human death are pictures in the carnal mind. They're just pictures in the carnal mind. Hypnotism. World thoughts. Mental images. And they can never get outside that carnal mind. But the carnal mind was not created by God. And so there is none. It's kind of the vanishing point. What's left? That you must find out in your meditation. So he says, whatever you see in the nature of sin, disease, or death is a part of the hypnosis. And furthermore, and here's where it gets deep, whatever you see as good humanhood is also a part of the same hypnosis. When you see a young, healthy person, you are being hypnotized. You are being fooled by an appearance of good. Until you can become dehypnotized to the degree that you know that there are not good human beings or bad human beings, there are not healthy human beings or diseased human beings, there is only God, the one life, soul, spirit, and substance, until that time, you will have to experience death. Ouch! Well, that one hurts. That stings. Listen. This is a serious paragraph here. Two paragraphs. Until you can become dehypnotized so that you do not see human beings, good or bad, so that you do not see a material universe, so you do not see birth and death, until that time that you become so dehypnotized that you see only God, one life, one soul, one spirit, one substance, one law, and one activity, until you become dehypnotized and awaken, you will have to experience death. Well, in the middle of this beautiful book, in the middle of this chapter, in the middle of this paragraph, he makes it as plain as pie. If you do not become dehypnotized to a material universe and to human beings, you must experience death. Yes, why? Because you're living in that hypnosis. You're living in the carnal mind. You yourself believe you're a human being. Now, he doesn't. Joel has reached a place where he sees clearly, with spiritual discernment, that in the kingdom of God in which he's standing, there has never been one single birth, never been one single death. Never. Because he sees that God is, and there is no God and. He says no one can ever be dehypnotized as long as he is judging by appearances, because the human mind with which he is judging is a state of hypnotism. So there you have it, another ugly truth, bitter in the belly. The human mind is hypnotism. So let's just say it plainly, the human mind is world mind, the human mind is carnal mind. Ah, but what about this Christ mind? What about the Christ mind that utters the word, and when the word is spoken, the human mind melts. When the word is spoken, the earth melts, right? The belief in matter, in material universe, in human beings melts. When the Christ mind speaks, the carnal mind dissolves. The hypnotism is broken. He tells us that plainly in The Art of Spiritual Healing. When you reach that place where you are not fighting because you recognize, wait a minute, there's nothing out here to heal or fix or improve. There's no human bad that I'm trying to turn into human good. There's no human lack I'm trying to turn into human supply. All that's taking place is the carnal mind throwing up appearances. And that carnal mind is hypnotism itself. So what am I doing here? I'm here to rest back in the Word and feel and discern and know the truth. And I am the truth. And so I'm here to know the I through experience, through feeling, through perception. And now, Father, let that perception take place, and I am still. Now, when you reach that state of not fighting, of non-effort, then there's a movement inside. The I comes out of the tomb and reveals itself. And when that I is upon you, the carnal mind is dissolved. The pictures are dissolved. The good and the bad is dissolved, and in its place stands I. Then you have something called Christ consciousness, or conscious awareness of Christ. So again, he says, no one can ever be dehypnotized as long as he is judging by appearances, because the human mind with which he is judging is a state of hypnotism. In other words, in looking out from our eyes, we are looking out from a state of hypnosis. Our eyes are always going to see babies being born and old people dying. You see? That's the hypnosis. If you're seeing babies being born and old people dying, you are focused on a material sense of universe. And the spiritual sense of universe is just might as well be somewhere else. Yet you're standing in a spiritual universe because you are that spiritual universe. But you're unaware of it. So he says, until we are able to shut off those five senses and develop an inner discernment, we are always going to see, hear, taste, touch, and smell error. If we look through our eyes at the people of the world, all we shall ever see are human beings. But there are no human beings. Isn't that crazy? I'm sure somebody hearing this talk for the first time that has no background is thinking, what? Those Infinite Way people are off the deep end. They are not in touch with reality. And yet, we look at that one that's just entering the Infinite Way for the first time, and we realize they are not in touch with reality. It's a very strange thing, isn't it? My people are peculiar people. So, the five senses are tools of the carnal mind. Very strange thing, isn't it? We're learning to live in such a way, in such a consciousness that does not require the five senses, nor does it require thinking. In The Art of Spiritual Healing, he says plainly in that chapter, what did hinder you? Our offense and our defense is not physical and not mental. No action, no thought. It is something called spirit, and you can't think. You can't get your mind around infinite, incorporeal spirit. How do you get your mind around that? Remember, Joel sought for a term that he could not get his mind around because the mind would try to pretend. You choose the word God, and the mind would build a concept and have you praying to a concept, and of course, that gets no results. So he came up with, or it was revealed to him, infinite invisible. Now, there you go. Get your mind around that. Let me see you draw a picture of the infinite invisible. You can't, but you can experience it when the mind is finally still, stops fighting, stops seeking, rests back in some such word as, it is my good pleasure to give you an awareness of reality. Or the kingdom, then you can receive it from within. You'll be lifted into the conscious awareness of Christ, of I. And without the senses and without the thinking mind, you will see with spiritual discernment. Whereas before I was thinking, now I see. It's quite a difference. Thought versus realization. So, the only way, he says, to be dehypnotized is to quiet the physical senses, to be still inside, and then spiritual awareness reveals the truth of being that enables us to see that which is not visible, to hear that which is not audible, to know that which is not knowable with the human senses. In other words, to know the kingdom. The invisible spiritual kingdom, or spiritual self, or spiritual consciousness, or Christ. Yes, you can't get a hold of this, can you? It must become your living awareness. Not something you think, something you know. But you don't know it with the mind, you know it with your spiritual faculties. He says no one will ever be able to understand the spiritual universe until he develops that inner spiritual consciousness, that which is called Christ consciousness. So, this is assuming that all these terms make sense to you. Remember, let's look. Hang on a second. I'm going to go get something. This is assuming your study of this book, that you've already come up through 1960, our spiritual resources, and then 61, the contemplative life, and the man was not born to cry, living now, and finally, realization of oneness. So right there is 5 years of study. And so it's assuming that before you got to that, you started with living the infinite way and practicing the presence. You remember? We started with those books. So this should be somewhere around 7 years before you're ready to look at this deep chapter, No And, and begin to understand the principles involved in spiritual healing. So when he says no one will ever be able to understand the spiritual universe until he develops that inner spiritual consciousness, that which is called Christ consciousness, he is assuming that you know what he's talking about. That you have had a glimpse of this Christ consciousness in your meditation. And that you have experienced being able to see through the carnal mind's mental images to the underlying reality that God is. So he says, it was Christ consciousness which enabled Jesus to say to Pilate, the man who had the greatest temporal power of his day in Jerusalem, thou couldst have no power at all against me except it were given thee from above. How could Jesus make such a daring statement? Well, it was only because he had the inner vision to see through. He saw through the man to something beyond what the eyes could see and the ears could hear. He knew something that the human mind, the human being, could not know. And he proved it when he allowed himself to be crucified. They could crucify him, but they could not kill him. The crucifixion had no power. So, he says, the dehypnotized consciousness sees reality. Dehypnotism is a state of consciousness that sees that which actually is. It is the ability to see, hear reality. To see disease not as disease, but to be able to separate these from the person and realize we are dealing with an appearance produced by the belief in a self apart from God. A universal belief so powerful that it operates as law in our consciousness until we detect and cast it out. That is, until we know the truth which makes us free. And the only way this can be accomplished is through spiritual consciousness. First of all, we must know this. We cannot cure a disease. There is none. We cannot overcome poverty. There is none. We cannot overcome death. There is none. We are dealing with hypnotism. Well, this is important here, very important. So listen. We are dealing with false appearances. Now, you can call them what you want to. Mental images, appearances, carnal mind, world thought, human mind, thoughts about the world, thoughts about a material universe, a belief in good and bad, belief in good and evil, a belief in two powers. Oh, the list goes on and on. Sin, Satan, appearance, illusion, mirage, white poodle. I like Moriarty. I read all of Sherlock Holmes' stories when I was a kid. And I have the two big volumes here somewhere of all the stories. And there was a movie called They Might Be Giants, and George C. Scott was the star, and he was a mental patient that thought he was Sherlock Holmes, and the doctor treating him was a woman named Dr. Watson. And he escaped from the mental institution, and she followed him around trying to convince him that he was not who he thought he was. But he knew he was Sherlock Holmes, and there was a scene where he stood on the beach and he was looking out across the ocean, and he said to Dr. Watson, Sherlock Holmes said, "Wherever there is disease and death and destruction, there is Moriarty." And as I was watching that, I thought, Moriarty, now that's a good name for mortal mind, isn't it? That's a good name for world thought. And so sometimes when nobody's watching and I'm not telling anybody, I'll say to myself, there's Moriarty again. So I like Moriarty. So you see, the word is not important so long as you see it as meaning nothingness. That's what he tells us in The Art of Spiritual Healing. And that's what he reiterates here. But, and this is a big however, these mental images, this carnal mind, this world mind, this human mind, listen, is so powerful that it operates as law unto us in our consciousness until we individually, you and me, detect it and cast it out. That is, until we know the truth which makes us free. So if it's not dealt with, if we just go on our merry way, seeing babies being born and people maturing and people dying, seeing some sick, some well, some rich, some poor, some lonely, some companioned, some male, some female, some big, some small, some fat, some thin. If we just continue on our merry way and look at these mental images, the mental images we're seeing act as law unto us. And we are under the law. You and I individually must take a stand. We must decide, this is going to involve some work in the beginning in particular, until I can reach that stage that Joel was at, and I just smile and see through them all the time, or most of the time. It's going to involve some work. I'm going to have to do this consciously. I don't like work, but so what? I don't want to be under the law. And so I'm going to have to sit down and start somewhere. Maybe just with my family. Maybe just with myself. But I've got to start somewhere and begin to see. Well, I have to begin to detect and cast it out. I have to know the truth which will make me free and come out from under the law and live by grace. The illumined walk without fear by grace. And I want to be one of those illumined. See, illumination dissolves all material ties. Yes, it dissolves all material ties. And up above that it says, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Well, that's because everything I build with the five senses, looking at these mental images of a material universe and human beings separate and apart from God, that are born and die, everything I build with that is in vain and must be dissolved. And it can either be dissolved at the end, only to be repeated again and again and again, or it can be dissolved right now. I can take the bit in my teeth and say, okay, let's get to work. What do I have to do? You see, I studied the infinite wave for a long time before I recognized I'm still experiencing all these problems. What is going on? And so I dug deeper. I ordered every tape, every single tape. I went through the catalog of Joel Goldsmith tapes. And at that time, the Infinite Way headquarters was in Arizona, so I called out to Arizona and I ordered every single tape on the nature of error. I had to find out what was going on. I ordered them all, every one. I have them here. And I listened, and I studied, and I listened, and I underlined, and I listened, and I listened, and I listened. Finally, I came to see, yes, this operates as law. This world mind, world thought, world mental images, Moriarty, this operates as law unto me until I detect it and cast it out. And how do I detect it and cast it out? Well, I go back to the art of spiritual healing. What does it say? It says I have to, well, let's put it in the exact words instead of rephrasing it. It says we sit down in meditation and we are not tricked into treating persons or conditions, which it's going to say later in this chapter we're looking at. Leave them alone and get back to a substanceless substance to which you can give any name you like. Carnal mind, hypnotism, suggestion, Moriarty. It can be anything as long as you interpret it as meaning nothingness. No substance, no law, no cause. When you really begin to comprehend that you are not dealing with people, when you learn to eliminate them and their claims from your thought, and in every instance deal with the root of the problem, the carnal mind, nothingness, the arm of flesh, nothingness, you will find how quickly you will be able to become consciously aware of a spiritual presence. This presence cannot be felt until you are free of the barrier, and the barrier is the belief in two powers, the belief in a self apart from God. See? Now, this carnal mind, this world thought, this mental images, this is not the opposite of a divine mind. You are not looking for a divine mind to do something to the carnal mind. The minute you have made the carnal mind a nothingness, really made it a nothingness, you no longer have two powers, and you can rest. You can rest in the Word, waiting for the Spirit of the Lord God to be upon you, and when it comes, it breaks the hypnotism. See? The weapon against error, our offense and defense, is something that is neither physical, mental, no action, no words, no thoughts, only the awareness of God. And finally, as you carry this out in practice, watching the stone cut out of the mountain without hands, you stand to one side as a witness or a beholder, and eventually a state of peace comes and you catch a glimpse of God as is. See? So there it is. Those two pages in the Art of Spiritual Healing. After all the study, after all the months and years of study and reading and meditation after meditation and practicing the principles, I finally narrowed it down to what I just read to you, those two or three paragraphs. That's the entire answer. But putting that into practice is what we're talking about now. Because these mental images act as law unto you until you practice what we're talking about. Well, he puts it this way, until you know the truth which makes you free. And the way to know that truth is through inner realization. And inner realization can't happen until you can reach a place of stillness in which the mind is still, and then Christ consciousness comes forward and announces itself. That can't happen as long as you have a belief in a person, a material sense of universe, a person that is born or dies. As long as you have a belief in that, and you're trying to heal it and reform it and fix it and correct it, then you are stuck in that hypnotism. You have to reach a place through whatever term works for you. He gave us a new one there, the arm of flesh. Nothingness. Until you can come to a term for you that is impersonal, belongs to no one, and has no person, until you can come up with a term that is impersonal and means nothingness, and really feel the nothingness of it, you will not be able to relax enough to behold the stone cut out of the mountain without hands, or Christ consciousness announce itself without thought. So you see, it all comes down to going into your temple and practicing. Practice, practice, practice. And who knows how long it'll take. Remember, it took Joel 8 months, 12 times a day, before he received his first conscious awareness experience in meditation, which only lasted a half a second. And then it was a couple of days before it happened again. But eventually, he says, he reached the place where he could enter that consciousness with a smile. And he could do it while he was swimming or mowing the lawn or planting flowers or even eating dinner. He says that. That's how come he could pick up the phone and he could heal 300 people of the cold and grip and the flu in one day. Because he didn't spend an hour trying to reach that place. He had reached the state of awareness or the level of consciousness where that consciousness was living him. And so when he picked up the phone, it was, I'll take care of it. Leave it with me. I've got it now. Don't you worry. I am with you. And that's how he met him, just like that, with a smile. True, he got up in the morning at 3 o'clock in the morning and meditated from then until 7 when he opened his office. And that's how he maintained that consciousness. That's part of how he maintained that consciousness. However, what I'm talking about right here is we have to get to the place where we say, I'm tired of this. There's got to be a way. And then how did he do it? And really go into the study. And hopefully going into this chapter, into this book, into these several books, into this series of talks, will help you see that there is work to do. And it starts with realizing disease is not disease. We are dealing with a false appearance produced by the belief in a self apart from God, in the belief of God and something else. A universal belief so powerful that it operates as law in our consciousness until we detect it, cast it out. That is, until we know the truth, which makes us free. Or until we have that experience he disclosed in The Art of Spiritual Healing, which makes us free. So he says, the only way this can be accomplished is through spiritual consciousness. First of all, we must know this. We cannot cure a disease. There is none. We cannot overcome poverty. There is none. We cannot overcome death. There is none. We are dealing with hypnotism. We, in the infinite way, believe that even a mental cause is as much of an illusion as the physical disease, because all there is to the human seeing is of the nature of illusion. So there you have it again. See, you're just reading along, la 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 la, isn't this beautiful? But you miss what he's saying, and the impact and the powerfulness of it. All there is to the human seeing is illusion. There you have it. The truth is that all there is infinite God and its creation. There is nothing else. Okay, so that wipes out everything that you see of a human nature. Again, him telling us, it's not easy to stop seeing human beings, but I finally made it. And I'm hoping that all of us hearing these talks can practice these principles and one day say, it's not easy, but I finally made it, and here's how you do it. To understand reality, we must understand that spirit alone is real, since spirit is infinite. Therefore, we are not dealing with the physical effects of mental causes. We are dealing only with God manifesting itself and expressing its infinite harmonies, and with a universal belief in a self apart from God and a universe apart from God. So, here it is again in this paragraph. You are standing in the finished spiritual creation. In the beginning, God. God plus nothing leaves God. But you're not seeing it. You're not using that faculty of spiritual discernment. You're using a human mind, a universal belief, a series of universal beliefs, which is showing you a self apart from God, many selves apart from God, and a universe apart from God, a universe in which a self can be born and dies. But you're standing in a spiritual universe, but not seeing it. And you won't see it by somebody coming by and waving their magic wand. You're not going to see it one day you plug in a tape and it's the perfect tape and it finally gives you that realization. It's not going to happen that way. It's going to happen over the effort that you put in learning how to be effortless in your meditation. It's going to come from you learning how to enter Christ consciousness and eventually never leave Christ consciousness. He says, can you believe that there is God and sickness too? Where would God be while someone is suffering? Now listen to this. This is such a heavy duty chapter. I don't know how you could read it and not just have to put it down and say, oh, I've got to look at this. I've got to meditate on this. Here he says, in reality, and that's in italics, he might as well say in the kingdom of heaven again. In reality, there never has been a sick person or a dead one. Now, I just came from, well, I didn't just come. I guess it's been a couple years now. From my wife's father's, so that would be, what is that, my stepfather? Father-in-law? I always get those two mixed up. I think it's my father-in-law. But anyway, I just came from his funeral, and it was an open casket, and I looked in there, and there was his little tiny body, and or shell, really. There was nobody there. There was nobody home. He's not here. He was risen. I looked in there, there was nothing there. Nothing. And here it says, in reality, there never has been a dead person. And so, there wasn't a dead person there either. That's the appearance. The appearance was that there was a person there that was no longer moving around and functioning and therefore dead. But there was no one there. There wasn't a dead person or a live person. There was no one there. And I could see that. That individual center of God consciousness was operating perfectly fine in the kingdom of heaven. So listen. Everybody who has ever lived from the beginning of all time is still alive. And unless you accept this truth, you are really an atheist. Now that's pretty plain. And this sentence here bothered me for a long time. I had to look at this. Because he says on the next page, there never has been a man who crowded another man off of the earth. Never. And you have to stop and ask yourself, but wait a minute now. What about Iraq? What about those roadside bombs that are constantly blowing people up? What about Afghanistan? What about the Taliban who shot women in the back of the head? because they weren't following the rules. What about the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq? What about the bombings of embassies? And what about all the children and women and men that died in these two places, Afghanistan and Iraq, here in the last few years? And for that matter, what about the people that died in the attacks on 9/11 when the trade towers came down? There was people of all different races and religions and nationalities that died when those buildings came crashing down. So how can he say there never has been a man who crowded another man off the earth? It sure seemed like they pushed them off or out. And so these are things that I had to go into meditation and say, what does he mean by this? I don't get it. I don't see it. And I had to take it into meditation. I had to ponder it and contemplate and meditate and ask for light. Because he's right. There never has been a man who crowded another man off the earth. All of these images are a part of that thing he's terming hypnotism. And if you were dehypnotized at the moment of these images, you would be able to see that in reality, none of this ever happened. And I know if you're one of the relatives of somebody that passed on that was in that trade tower when it came crashing down, that's probably not something you want to hear. On the other hand, if you are a person that is able to look through that image into the invisible, then you saw that your relative did not die. You saw that there cannot be God and God was appearing as, and that which God appeared as is still appearing as in the invisible. And so if you had spiritual discernment, you saw no one died. You saw there never has been a man who crowded another man off the earth. Never. You saw those pictures are a part of universal hypnotism. If we can be made to believe that there is a mortal material universe, we too are part of this hypnotism. Ah, but if we are able to see the nothingness of this images, these images, and are able to rest in the Word, then God revealed itself to you, and you saw God can never die. He says, the world misunderstands the meaning of the word sin. Sin is really the acceptance of a material universe. Oh, here's another heavy, heavy two sentences. These two sentences should be your cone for the next year. Sin is really the acceptance of a material universe. Just going back to the belief that there are human beings is the sin that throws a person into disease and sin and death again. Or, in other words, into hypnotism. That's what constitutes hypnotism. Hypnotism is a belief in a material universe, the belief that there are human beings. You see how deep this is? You can't waltz into the infinite way and take this as your first book. Well, you can, but I don't think you'll get the depth of it. All right, so take a look at that. He has it in italics for a reason. Sin is really the acceptance of a material universe. If you see a material universe in which men can be killed and pushed off the earth, and women and children can be pushed off the earth, then you are in sin. You're missing the way. You're in hypnotism. And the mind that's showing you this hypnosis, you're going to have to find a way to step out of that mind. And you'll find it through the practice of these principles and meditation. He says, in one man, hypnotism appears as some sinful thing or thought. In another, it appears as disease. And in still another, as poverty. The particular form makes no difference. It's all hypnotism. There's only one error, and that is hypnotism. You see, remember in the Kailua study series when he tells us about the fabric? The fabric of this thing is hypnotism. So that's what you need to see. When you sit down to meditate, you might as well just take it as the fabric. The fabric of this is hypnosis. It's no different than saying, no answer to this. Yeah, there's no answer to hypnosis, is there, except to awaken. So, no answer to this. And now he says you can take a statement that reminds you that God is, such as, thy grace is my sufficiency, and then rest until God reveals itself, and that breaks the hypnotism, or that awakens you out of the hypnotism. Now, we've reached an hour already, and we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, we've got a lot to go here, 6.5 pages, so we're just going to run over, because this is a very important chapter. So if you want to take a break, you can take a break right now. We'll pause for a minute. I think that's a good idea. Let's take a break. That way I don't have to worry about running over. You can split the talk right here and make the rest of this talk the second half, okay? All right, let's take a moment and have a meditation. And just simply realize God is. All of these images are the fabric of hypnotism. Hypnotism appearing as. A hypnotized mind appearing as. Hypnotized mind seeing images. And so there's nothing to fix or heal or improve. I simply drop these mental images right now. And I rest back knowing that God is. This is a spiritual universe. Father, reveal the spiritual universe, the spiritual being, the spiritual presence that I am. Okay, what comes to me is this. Please, do not pretend. Do not pretend to yourself. That won't get you anywhere. Do not walk around saying to yourself and repeating affirmations like, this is only a mental image, God is here, God is, only God is, this is only a mental image. While you're suffering from lack, limitation, disease, and death. Please do not pretend. That's not what is meant by practicing. If you are unable to sit down in your meditation and recognize the nothingness, the impersonal nothingness of this appearance, whatever the appearance is, to the place where you can relax and totally rest and let go into the arms of God and rest in that stillness as God reveals itself and you stand to one side as a witness or a beholder. If you're not able to enter that Christ mind or the mind which was in Christ Jesus, if you're not able to do that yet, well, be honest about it. And I also want to say all of those of you who aren't able to do that, there's nothing wrong with asking for help. That's how we are lifted up. I don't mean asking for help to fix your little problem of supply. I mean asking for help to see that these mental images, no matter what their name, are all hypnotism, and to awaken to the kingdom in which you're standing. Ask for help for that. And then, of course, the little supply will take care of itself. And so those of you who are a part of the Yahoo group or the Yahoo list called Mystical Principles, I want you to feel free to post a message if you need help, if you need those of us in this small group to help lift you, then we can do that. I would like it if we would all have a meditation at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. Eastern Time, and if anyone posts the message, "I need help, I need lifting, would you please help me to attain this realization?" However you post it, go ahead and post it that you need some help, and the rest of us in the group will give it to you, and you sit down in meditation too. Alright? Let's work together to help each other to move toward this inner realization in which we recognize the impersonal nothingness of hypnotism, and in which we rest and receive the spiritual discernment of my kingdom. Okay? Don't be afraid. Don't be bashful. Don't be shy. Just go ahead and post it, and we'll work together to lift us out of the hypnotism and into spiritual awareness. So, he says here on the next page, if we can be induced to give treatments to persons, we are in materia medica because we are treating effects. Yes, we are not here to, well, we read it in The Art of Spiritual Healing. We are not here, as we said in part one of this talk, we are not here to improve people. We have to forget people and their claims. We are here to see through the impersonal nothingness of these mental images to the point where we can release them, completely release them, stand still, and behold, God is. As an inner realization, not as a thought. He says, until we lay the axe at the root of the tree, which is hypnotism, we do not come out of the mortal material state of consciousness. When we are able to see through the hypnotism, regardless of the name or nature, our patient, our student, will experience harmony. Why? Because of the practitioner's ability to see through the claim of hypnotism and realize God is the principle of all that is. Yes, you know, we said earlier that these mental images, this carnal mind, this mortal mind, this world thought, this Moriarty, this arm of flesh, it acts as law unto us until we see through it and rest and receive the grace of God consciously. However, you must also see that when you do recognize and realize and become consciously aware of the living presence of God, of God ising, then God becomes the law onto your experience, and your experience becomes harmonious because God is harmonious. You see that? And then you come under spiritual law, which is called grace. He says, hypnotism is itself no thing. No form, no cause, no effect. You see, recognizing any form or appearance of error as hypnotism and then dismissing it without any further concern is the correct way to handle all error. Yes, but after you dismiss it, with no further concern, you have to rest back until the Father reveals itself, or the Father puts the seal upon it, as Joel says. That completes the meditation. You see? Until you become aware of and are standing still as a witness or a beholder and become aware of the stone cut out of the mountain by spirit and not thought, until you become consciously aware of that spiritual consciousness moving through you, then the meditation is not complete. It's not enough to just say, well, this is impersonal hypnotism, it belongs to no one, and it's nothingness, and I release it. And then get up and go about your business. That's not enough. In the beginning. However, the time does come when you're able to say, well, this is nothingness, and simply smile because you're looking with conscious awareness of spirit and its formations. He says, meditate on this idea of hypnotism as the substance of every form of the mortal or material universe. And that's, he's giving you a cone there to meditate on. Hypnotism is the substance of the material universe. And so, that's a light way of saying the entire mortal material universe in which you are living is hypnotism. And to awaken from the dream, I love the way he says that. I love the way it was revealed to him in the infinite way, in the New Horizon. I just love it, the words that were given to him. Do you remember how the New Horizon came about? He was awakened in the middle of the night, came out of a dream. And when he opened his eyes, there was a, I don't know what you call it, I would say like a tapestry hanging down from his ceiling. And on it were written in letters of gold this entire chapter, The New Horizon. And so it was given to him by his higher consciousness, by Christ, really. And I love it. I love the words of it. I love the feel of it. I love everything about it. The sense which presents pictures of discord and inharmony, disease and death, is the universal mesmerism which produces the entire dream of human existence. And so if you read that backwards, human existence is an entire dream produced by mesmerism or hypnotism. It says, it must be understood that there is no more reality to harmonious human existence than to discordant world conditions. You see? There it is in one sentence. The human good and the human evil, both our hypnotism. They're not there. There's no reality there in those pictures. And furthermore, since no illusion is ever externalized, the pictures are only in the carnal mind, which is the human mind. Or as Herb puts it, the carnal mind re-echoed in the human mind. It must be realized that the entire human sense is mesmeric suggestion. Human scene, I mean. The entire human scene is hypnotism. Now there it is, plain as pie. The entire, I must be thinking of pie. My wife made a pumpkin pie. The entire human scene is mesmeric suggestion. Well, there you have it. That should be the end of all your studies. Once you recognize that the entire human scene is hypnotism, and right there, where these pictures have been appearing, when you no longer see through that dark glass, you see face to face that God is ising. And rest in that ising and watch God is. It's quite fun when you get the hang of it. When you have that, you're done with studying. Now you just have to live it. And indeed, he says that later in this chapter that we're reading, No End. But getting back to the New Horizon here, it must be realized that the entire human scene is mesmeric suggestion, and we must rise above the desire for even good human conditions. understand fully that suggestion, belief, hypnotism, world thought, arm of flesh, Moriarty, impersonal nothingness is the substance or fabric of the whole mortal universe. You see, what you're doing in your meditation is not healing. You're not doing spiritual healing work. That's just the terms we use. No, what you're doing is recognizing deeply that the fabric you're looking at is world thought. And then dropping it. Resting back in my peace. As the Father reveals itself, the spiritual kingdom, the I of your being, of all being. So he says, understand fully, suggestion, belief, hypnotism is the substance, fabric of the whole mortal universe, and human conditions of good and evil are dream pictures, having no reality or permanence. And then be willing for the harmonious as well as the inharmonious conditions of mortal existence to disappear from your experience in order that reality may be known and enjoyed and lived. You see, it takes us quite a while on the spiritual path, doesn't it, to get to this state of willingness, the state of readiness, and a bit of frustration and tiredness. I'm tired. I don't want these pictures anymore. I want to see reality. I want to awaken. Because when I understand fully that the entire human scene is hypnotism, and when I'm willing for both the good and the bad pictures to disappear, then something happens. Something is revealed to me. And he says, above this sense life, then, there is a universe of spirit governed by love, people with children of God living in a household or temple of truth. This world is real and permanent. Its substance is eternal consciousness. And this is a glimpse of reality. So, we understand fully that the entire human scene is hypnotism, and by resting out of that, resting back in the Word, we see a universe of spirit governed by love, which substance is consciousness. I love these words. I love that chapter. He says in the Kalu study series that he sees very few students, very few Infinite Way students studying the New Horizon and putting forth the effort. He says you should study it for a couple of years or more. So, he says, meditate on this idea of hypnotism as the substance of every form of mortal or material universe. When you see sin, disease, lack, and limitation, remember it's hypnotism presenting itself to you in what is called evil forms. But, and here's the part that we don't like to let go of, but remember, we just read there, you have to be willing for the good and the bad to go in order to see that which is, in order to see God face to face. First in your meditation and then with eyes open. So he says, but then when you see beauty all around, the mountains, oceans, sunshine, remember, these too are forms of hypnotism, only this time appearing to you as good forms. Now, this time of year, which is autumn in the Appalachian Mountains, I can walk out into my front yard and see 10,000 colors. The leaves are all changing. It's quite beautiful. Just a myriad of colors. And they're all flowing together. And there's greens and golds and salmon colors, magenta, there's red, there's just all kinds of green, there's just all kinds of beautiful colors, different shades of green, against the blue sky, sometimes white puffy clouds. And in the morning, this morning it was in the 30s, you could also smell people's chimneys burning logs, It's beautiful this time of year. However, it's hypnotism. I hate to break it to you, but no, not really. I don't hate it. I kind of like it. This is hypnotism. This beautiful autumn picture. This is a hypnotism. Because that's not what's here. How do you know? Because there can be a hurricane come crashing through North Carolina, and if it reaches this far inland, it can rip these trees right out and flood. You can have a mudslide come down the mountain and take out half the trees or all the trees. You can have a forest fire which somebody leaves. Maybe one of those chimneys doesn't have a good enough grating on it, and the sparks fly up and catch the trees on fire, and you have a forest fire, and they all burn down. You see, it's the opposite of that good picture is evil, an evil picture. Both sides have to go, my dear friends, both sides. You can't have one and not the other. And so, this beautiful picture is also hypnotism. And I have to be willing to let both sides go in order to see the universe not made with hands, eternal. In order to see, consciously see into the eternal, immortal, spiritual universe. Now he says, this does not mean that we are not to enjoy the good of human existence, but rather we are to enjoy it for what it is, not as something real. Because the reality, that which underlies all good, is spiritual and must therefore be spiritually discerned. We enjoy the forms of good, knowing them to be temporary. Okay, so I'm perfectly free to go outside and say, oh, isn't that beautiful? And doesn't that smell good? As long as at the same time I'm doing that, I'm seeing, but looking through this, I know that only God is. You see, Joel telling us we reach the place we train ourselves to at all times an area of our consciousness is dwelling in God. He meant that. It takes work in the beginning to remember. And then it becomes second nature, and it takes over eventually. And so even though you're enjoying that, aren't those trees beautiful? Aren't those leaves beautiful? Doesn't that smell nice? Doesn't that breeze feel good? You're at the same time saying, thank you, Father, God is. There's an area of your consciousness that's seeing reality. So he says, when confronted with the negative aspects of hypnotism, that is, sin, disease, lack, and limitation, the most important point to remember is that we are not to be fooled by them, not to be fooled into trying to reform evil or sinful person, but always quickly to remember, oh no, this is hypnotism appearing in still another form. See, the fabric is still hypnotism, which is impersonal nothingness. Hypnotism, which in and of itself cannot be the substance, law, cause, or effect of any form of reality. He says, such a practice enables you to become a spiritual healer. Now, it says, never try to change a person or a condition. Yes, that's what we read in The Art of Spiritual Healing. As soon as you're able to really come to the place where you stop trying to change a person or a condition, then you're able to get still enough to come into the conscious awareness of a presence. Or the descent of spirit, whatever words you want to use for that inner movement. He says, as you go further in the work and through meditation are able to rise to a point where you are above this world, then you will know me as I am. And that is how healings take place. Yes, because above this sense life is a universe of spirit governed by love. And in your meditation, when you're able to rise into that universe governed by love, that spiritual universe, then you will know me as I am. Yes, you will know the I of being. And that is how healings take place, because when you know that I of being, it becomes the law. He says, if you can be made to treat a person in an attempt to change them, then you are hypnotized. If you can be made to fear war, or even an atomic bomb, you are hypnotized. And it's only a question then of what date will be placed on your tombstone. Joel can be so right up front in your face, can he? If you're seeing persons and a material universe, he says, it's only a question of what date will be placed on your tombstone. Yes, because if you're seeing a person, you're seeing as a person. And as a person, you were born and therefore you must die. You're not standing in your true being. If you're standing in your true being, you're not a person. You're not a person. You are that eternal temple not made with hands. And you were never born and will never die. So he says, if, however, you catch this vision, when the time comes for you to leave this world, you will step out into a transitional experience which will be higher and better than this one. Now, that's what we talked about a couple of weeks ago when we said, if you're standing in your material sense of existence, in your humanhood, in this self apart from God, when the moment of passing comes, you will die. You have to, because you're not real. But if you've risen above that through the practice of these principles, and you have spiritual discernment, and you are standing in your true identity as incorporeal being, when that moment of passing comes, you don't die. There's an ongoing transitional experience in which you, as your incorporeal self, live forever. And there's no break in consciousness. You don't have to come back and live a different life. You remember who you are throughout eternity. You have come into Christ consciousness. You know God aright. And to know God aright is eternal life. So, it says, getting back to treatments, you cannot treat a person. You cannot treat a condition. And to do that would be like trying to treat the snakes appearing in the flower pot and saying, I've got to get rid of the snakes. As soon as I get rid of them, I'll be able to study better. Do you see how foolish that is? There are not any snakes. You are never going to get rid of them. And you might as well say to yourself, there's not any disease. You're never going to get rid of it. There's not any lack. You're never going to get rid of it. There's not any loneliness. You're never going to get rid of it. All you have to do is get rid of the hypnotism. Now that you can do. You can awaken out of the hypnotism. The hypnotism can be broken. That constant train of mental images can come to a standstill. It can be broken. Can stop. It can stop. When you really know and believe that, not just believe the words, well, you will no longer have to study truth, because the only purpose in studying truth, he says, is to learn that hypnotism is the only error. When you have learned that, there is nothing more to study. All the rest is to be lived within your own being. Yes. When you really know that there is not a disease or a lack or a limitation or death or loneliness to get rid of, when you really recognize the fabric of all these is that world thought, and that world thought or that hypnotism in the mind is the only thing to get rid of, and you don't really get rid of it because it's not a thing. You simply see through it. It dissolves in the presence of Christ. Then you know that you have to step out of that mind And let that mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. Let the conscious awareness dawn in your consciousness of I, Christ. And in the presence of that light, the hypnotism is dissolved. The minute you try to change or improve a disease or condition, you yourself are in hypnotism. There is no disease or condition. Yes, you've got to train yourself. Like he said in the Kalua study series, you've got to train yourself to see. It's a fabric. Remember he said, when it finally came to him and it finally clicked, was when he was studying the life of Buddha. And Buddha said to himself, I've got to remove disease, death, lack, and limitation from the world. And he said, Joel said, that gave me the whole thing. Yes, because he finally came to see, I'm not getting rid of diseases. I'm not healing things. I'm not getting rid of lack and limitation. I'm not supplying somebody. No. This is hypnotism. It's not in the world. Buddha said, I've got to remove that from the world. And Joel did, and he's telling you to do it. Remove it from the world. No illusion is externalized. Put it back where it is, in this hypnotism of the carnal mind. It's not in the world. It's in the mind. Then, when you have it there, you can see it's a nothingness. It has no form. It's a substanceless thought. Now, as a substanceless thought, as an impersonal nothingness belonging to no one, then there's nothing to get rid of. I have to drop it. I have to rest back and see through it to the underlying reality that God is. Now, Father, reveal thyself. I'm not struggling anymore to fix anything. I am silent before your throne. Reveal yourself. Christ, come out of the tomb. Let I reveal itself. And then, in that experience that comes, you are lifted above the mind into the spiritual presence, or spiritual kingdom, or spiritual universe. And you see, not through a glass darkly, but finally face to face. And when you see face to face, the intense shining of the Christ light breaks the hypnotism, dissolves the misty thoughts, and that Christ life reveals itself and appears as good. But we're not fooled into thinking that the good is real. No, we're still seeing and staying with the underlying, invisible, incorporeal spiritual universe. It's just appearing now as harmony. Those who are reading or studying truth, or who are using truth for healing, for supply, or for some other purpose, will find that the more their minds are fixed on getting rid of a condition or getting the healing, the more are their minds in a mirage, or the more are their minds in hypnotism. They're hypnotized. You must see. There is no human demonstration to make. Aha! That's a very important line. You have no demonstration to make out here. It's not about that. You're not trying to demonstrate anything out here. You're trying to rest out of that mind so that you are so still, you really do come to a stop, to a rest, and stand to one side as a witness or a beholder as God reveals itself. That's your demonstration. So he says, there's only one demonstration, the realization of God. And that, of course, breaks the hypnotism. When you have the realization of God, you have all. You can only demonstrate the presence of God. And that's your demonstration. Do you see that now? And so he says, there is no God and... And he's going to sum this up here. Recognizing the hypnotism includes the demonstration of getting rid of whatever form that hypnotism is appearing. But you cannot get rid of the appearances, the forms rather, separate and apart from getting rid of hypnotism. Neither can you make a demonstration of home, employment, or health separate and apart from God, because there's no demonstration of good apart from God. In other words, my kingdom is not of this world. You're not demonstrating something of this world. You're demonstrating my kingdom. So he says there's no use treating person, place, or thing because all there is to error is hypnotism. And there's no use seeking a demonstration of person, thing, or condition because there's no demonstration apart from the realization of God. The important point to understand is that it's the same on the positive side as on the negative side. On the positive side, it's demonstrating the consciousness, the conscious awareness of the presence of God. On the negative side, it's realizing that no matter what the form of error is, it's hypnotism and hypnotism alone, which has no law, cause, reality, or effect. These are the two sides of the picture. Yes, that's the complete spiritual treatment. That's the complete letter. But that's not enough. You have to go beyond the letter to the actual conscious awareness of the living God, of the spiritual water springing up into everlasting life. Or you have to come into the conscious awareness of consciousness springing up into everlasting life. The entire basis of the Infinite Way teaching is that there is not God and. There's not God and health, God and strength, God and immortality, God and activity, God and supply. There's only God manifesting as. You do not have God the substance and a variety of forms. You have God appearing or formed, manifested, expressed. That's on that side. Then on the other side, there's no hypnotism and a disease. There's only hypnotism appearing as these pictures. The way to remove the effects of hypnotism is to understand hypnotism not as a thing, but as a no-thing. Yeah, it says a line in here in this book, and I just dearly love it. It says, we are not getting rid of carnal mind. There is none. We're getting rid of belief that carnal mind is power. See, we're getting rid of the belief that there is a carnal mind that's power. Remember he says in the very beginning of all this, Mary Baker Eddy, who started Christian Science, knew and said that mortal mind is not an entity or identity. Mortal mind is a term meaning nothingness. And again, we're thrown into the art of spiritual healing, which we just read, that says you can take any name you like so long as it means nothingness. And so that's the important point here. There is not hypnotism and a disease. There's only hypnotism appearing as these pictures. And the way to remove the effects is to understand it's nothing. It's no thing. It's nothingness. And in this paragraph is the beauty and the entire secret of the Infinite Way. And he says it. Here you have the secret of living. Ready? He's going to give you the secret. You've waited for the secret for many years. Here it is. When, through the senses, you observe life as it seems to be, that is, as you see, hear, taste, touch, or smell it, understand immediately this is hypnotism. This is the product of hypnotism. Through your spiritual sense, however, you discern right where this human, material, physical sense seems to be, is the spiritual, eternal, and immortal creation. And there's the secret of living. You see, hear, taste, touch, or smell hypnotism. But right where all of that appears, through your spiritual discernment, because you've practiced this for many years, some of you for a whole lifetime, first in your meditation and then with eyes open, now you are able to discern right where the senses are showing these pictures. There is a spiritual, eternal, immortal creation, not made by thought, but made by consciousness, eternal in the heavens. That's the whole secret. If you were to see a so-called evil appearance, he says, a sick, sinful, sick, dying, or dead appearance, you would probably be tempted immediately to know some truth. Now, that's what we used to do when we were only practicing the letter. Now we want to come up higher. He says, whereas if you saw normal human good, normal human wealth, harmony, wholeness, or prosperity, you would most likely accept that picture at its face value. But hypnotism is just as much hypnotism when it appears as good as when it appears as evil. You've got to come to that. You've got to grapple with it until you see both sides are the same hypnotism. And he says, when you come into a state of life, however, where you can look at the harmonious human appearance and recognize it as hypnotism or appearance or suggestion, and when you can look at the inharmonious or discordant human picture and recognize it as the product of the same hypnotism, appearance, or suggestion, then you have arrived at a point in consciousness in which you will not try to improve, heal, or correct the erroneous picture, nor experience undue satisfaction over the harmonious picture. You will know through your spiritual sense, regardless of the picture, good or bad, or the nature of its appearance, right there is spiritual reality. Right there is eternal, immortal being. And you will make no mental effort to correct, heal, or improve it. And with that ability to refrain from all attempts to heal, correct, or improve, you will have demonstrated the consciousness of God's allness. And that is spiritual healing. That's the mystical consciousness, Christ consciousness. Study that. This is page 71 in my book, Realization of Oneness, chapter No And. Here you have the secret of living is the first sentence, and it goes down to, with the ability to refrain from all attempts to heal, correct, or improve, you will have demonstrated the consciousness of God's allness, which is why he said in the Art of Spiritual Healing, when you really believe that you're not dealing with a person or an effect, when you're not dealing with a claim, you're not trying to fix it or heal it or improve it, then you'll be able to relax. See, you won't try to improve it. Be willing for both to be given up, he says, in the New Horizon, in the Infinite Way. The good and the bad, be willing to let both of them go. Stop trying to improve them and change one into the other. That's not what we're about. We're about letting them both go, seeing through both of them. And then, when you're able to really do that and relax, you'll see how fast the Spirit can descend, or the Christ will rise up, whatever words you like. The point is, you'll have the conscious awareness of the living temple of God, which I am. The I of you am. And then you will have demonstrated the consciousness of God's allness. And he says again, if you can know that the harmonious human appearances are no more real than the inharmonious or discordant ones, and if you can know that inharmonious, discordant, sick, sinful, dying human appearances are no more real than harmonious or helpful appearances, then you have arrived at a state of consciousness that spiritually discerns harmony right where any form or human appearance may be. So that means if you have this Christ consciousness, you can look at, on the morning of 9/11, the trade towers tumbling down and all the people in them, and you can see that there's no reality to this appearance. And you will have arrived at a state where you can spiritually discern harmony right there, right where this appearance may be. You see that? I know it's probably a hard pill to swallow, but it must be done. So he says, when you have become accustomed to the idea of observing the harmonious human appearances and the inharmonious human appearances with the same degree of unconcern, you will know that you have arrived at a state of spiritual consciousness in which you see that which is invisible, hear that which is inaudible, and know that which is unknowable. In other words, you will have arrived at Christ consciousness. And that, my dear friends, is the chapter No And. It's beautiful, is it not? Yes, it is. And it is very deep, very powerful, and should give you years of study. Because in it is the whole secret of living. It's the whole secret of spiritual consciousness. It's the whole secret of seeing through the illusion to the underlying reality of my kingdom, of the spiritual universe, of the I being itself. But it's very deep. It's a way to live above the pairs of opposites. It is the entire art of spiritual healing, the art of meditation, the mystical consciousness, the consciousness of incorporeality, all the entire infinite way distilled into one chapter. But it takes diving into it. It takes moving through it slowly, one paragraph at a time, underlining what really seems to strike you, taking that into your meditation, contemplating it until you come to the end of contemplation and there's no more you can think about it, and then stepping off into the unknown abyss called consciousness and letting consciousness reveal itself, the consciousness that wrote or dictated or spoke those words, the consciousness that spoke the new horizon, Christ consciousness. Well, I really had no idea I would go over an hour today, and we're getting close to almost 2 hours. And I suppose that's what had to happen because this chapter is so deep. It is my wish, my hope, that by going into these chapters, you're beginning to see how all of these words tie together, all of these different chapters, all of these different books, these different talks, these different lectures, how they all come together and really give you one infinite consciousness. Can you feel that Christ consciousness that motivated and moved through Joel and as Joel during these lectures and in his meditations and even in the middle of the night awakening him? Can you see, can you feel that consciousness? That's the consciousness called the Infinite Way. And that's your consciousness. As you move through these principles and you practice them, and that little self, that false sense of self, reaches that place of quietness in your meditation, and you feel, you become aware, you have a conscious awareness of the Spirit descending upon you, or Christ flowing up through. When you have the conscious awareness as you're standing to one side, you've reached that state of stillness in which there is no personal sense of self operating. You are just a witness, a beholder, an empty consciousness, and the Christ itself flows in and through that consciousness, and as that consciousness. You surely must recognize that your consciousness is the Infinite Way, and the Infinite Way has become your consciousness. And Joel says, when you reach that state, you no longer have to study truth. Now, your job is to live it. Now, your job is to be consciously aware through your spiritual discernment of the finished kingdom, of your true identity, of the I of your being. More and more become consciously aware of it. You have become one with the infinite way. It has become your consciousness. In other words, as many as receive this, to them gives he power to become the sons of God, or the consciousness of the infinite way. Now, it doesn't mean that you won't perhaps listen to a talk or read a mystical literature from time to time, because even Joel said he still continued to do that because he loved to see others and how they were experiencing and expressing this. And he received inspiration from them. But his job was living in the consciousness. And that should be your job. After these years of study, you should be willing now to let go of the good and the bad, so that you may rise into the mystical consciousness, and so that you may discern the spiritual universe governed by love, in which the I of you dwells. And this should become your experience. All right? The infinite way, Christ consciousness, is your consciousness. In a moment, you think not. In a moment, you take no thought. You have become willing to let all of that go. In that moment, in the absence of personal self, a personal sense of self, in the silence, the true silence, God flows through and becomes your awareness and becomes the eye of you. I don't know how it is for you, but for me, this week's talk has truly been quite wonderful, quite full of wonder, quite full of the eye of your being. So thank you. Thank you, Father. Thank you so much.